Okay, back to you, Kurt. Next session.
Where are we at?
Yeah, community planning.
Okay, Peter, how do you want to handle this today?
Okay, first of all, I mean, for those who were just interested to join us on testing the conferencing service, that part just ended. So if you are interested in the planning, stay with us. If not, then please feel free to.
So how many people do we have left?
Let me see.
Who's here? Peter and Kurt.
Matthew's here.
Peter Brown in Vienna.
Peter Brown.
So 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 people. Yeah.
Okay.
We pressed V and C. Maybe the shadow's not natural. So it's still alive.
Okay. Quick round. Each of us who's here, why don't you jump in and give us your personal objective for this planning session? What are you hoping to accomplish? Peter, let's start with you.
Okay. Since we've covered a lot of the other items at the last session, the one item that we missed talking about last time was on funding and sponsorships and sustainability. So if we could focus, I was hoping that we could focus on those issues this round. So I captured that on the agenda already. So this sponsorship, funding, and sustainability of the community.
Okay, Peter Brown.
Did he drop off?
He must have. Bob, any objectives for the planning session?
I found the apologizing effort in the Taxo Pizarro's project possibly useful in a lot of spaces, but almost impossible with the volunteer resources to get our hands around. It seems like NIST as a potential sponsor or NSF in its consilience effort might be a potential sponsor of the infrastructure, which leads to improved sustainability.
So how can I capture the essence of that? I mean, can I say using ontologizing as a means to get sponsorship and sustainability?
There's a methodology.
Uh-huh.
It had a number of steps.
Uh-huh. Well, using the ontologizing methodology as a means, or using ontologizing as a methodology?
Both.
Okay.
This is where that effort at glossary would be a good starting point.
As a starting point.
Not Pat Heine, the other Pat. At
Well, you've got Pat Cassidy or Pat Hayes. I can think of offhand. Do you mean either of those two?
No, not actually not that Pat, the other Pat.
A yet unnamed Pat draft pick?
Cassidy.
Pat Cassidy.
Cassidy.
Okay.
Awful one.
What about Pat Cassidy again? I missed that.
You made a good emphasis on the progress he was making at formalizing definitions and improving the definitional process, the terminology.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a lot of materials that we have available for mining.
Okay,
If you have less time available than abilities.
Bob, what kind of line are you on?
I'm on Skype.
Yeah, but what kind of internet connection?
I'm assuming it's voice over internet protocol. Are you having a hard time hearing me?
Yeah, there's some funny interruptions in between. So when it comes through, it's very clear, but then we've got like clicks and things in between. I don't know if other people are experiencing it.
Yeah, no, I'm getting that too. It's like the odd packet is getting delayed.
Hmm.
And it probably is the odd packet getting delayed.
So we're back to significant diagnostics on the connection. Sorry.
Well, yeah, back to the old topic. I think my conclusion of this is it's fine for participants, but we still want the speaker on the landline.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do that, we'll probably not have too many problems.
Yeah, well, unless like Peter Brown, you've got a 2 megabit connection. I mean, he was just fine on Skype the whole time. He was probably clearer than anyone.
He is, absolutely. Am I coming through clear?
Yes, you're absolutely fine.
Yeah, I'm on Skype too. I'm still on Skype. I actually killed my landline connection, so I'm only on Skype now.
Any other objectives? Who else is still on the line, please?
Matthew Wentz here. We've got the next database and ontology session coming up, and it was really just a matter of if there was anything that could be usefully done in this meeting for that. But that's really something for Peter to drive. In terms of what does he need? Is there something he needs from me that a conversation here would help with?
Okay.
One thing though, which was brought up in the posting, that is interesting. Actually, I mean, it's still Loomis is still around. I mean, I swiped that idea from the MIT Center for Collective Intelligence. The first group project they're doing is to put together a handbook. And that's why I brought this up to Matthew, and Matthew suggested, yeah, this is great. And when we are in a position, we could publish it to Wikipedia, which has a much, much larger audience than we do, in this niche space, which I think is a great idea. I am hoping that we almost adopt this as a sort of stock methodology on all the projects. So besides just doing lectures and discussions, then maybe one more deliverable would be a collaboratively developed article of some sort that is publishable to Wikipedia. I think that if we
that's absolutely what I was saying. I mean, this is one of these things about doing things, you know, accepting what's there and not trying to joining the club or clubs as necessary, rather than trying to compete or reinvent things that are working really well. And clearly, Wikipedia is phenomenally successful and has reached a level of mature stability in that when I look at it, on the whole, for the things that I know about, what I see there, I see as reasonably authoritative. So it's been around long enough for the natural processes to eliminate significant crap that may have been there.
Yeah. So I would hope that we put some more driving force behind that initiative. And if all the projects, let's say, including Taxothesaurus and ontology, measurement and evaluation, and so on, if we sort of take on this as a stock process, that would actually be nice.
Okay, that was it. And in fact, I would be I would want to contribute a little bit to the sponsorships discussion.
Okay.
Anybody else in the call with any objectives? Let's window down the topics.
Sure.
Yes.
This is Vasila. I think we need to, we may opt to increase the visibility of the community. I think the way the wiki is going very far, actually, but still not enough. It's sort of a resource for people to come and grab, and we don't, I don't see that it is being advertised in a way to increase the visibility of the community. That could be, Wikipedia article is a good idea in that sense to attract attention to the ontolog wiki. That ontolog as a group should perhaps be more visible, perhaps at conferences or at major events, setting up for, I don't know, maybe a table or some sort of flyer to attract more people, fresher resources, and maybe different work areas, for example.
So I had real difficulty understanding that. what I caught was we need to market ontolog more.
Right. I kept more presence for the ontolog community.
Yes.
Okay.
This would presumably. Go ahead.
If you're trying to finish, go ahead. I'll wait.
Yeah, I was saying that this would help recruit new talents into the community, which would add to the resources of the community and would help to broaden the spectrum of interest.
Great.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. So I'll add that as sort of broaden membership. You know, put more presence and broaden membership.
I'd like to elaborate on that. This is Jeff Wichita from a slightly different perspective, and it may not be quite the same way that was just spoken, but I first of all have to explain my interest is primarily coming from systems engineering. And what I would like to see is ontolog taking part in those things that help define standardized processes to create products of all types, whether it's software systems, hardware, you know, airplanes, whatever. And the reason I say that is one of the major problems that any project that's trying to create anything new in an engineering sense runs into is a great deal of terminological confusion during the life cycle, during the development life cycle. And what an ontology can do is straighten that out, especially if it's implemented in developmental tools. I think we all understand the value of ontologies in terms of requirements engineering, But if you think about how systems engineers develop products, they start with requirements. They develop specifications, usually written documents. They use block diagrams. They write scenarios. They develop timelines, state diagrams, and that sort of thing, functional block flow diagrams. But in all of those, there's no clear tie of the language, a common language, specification language that follows through that, with a specification language that's specific to the problem domain in which you're trying to create that product or service. And I believe that ontological underpinnings will greatly assist that kind of development. I've said quite a whole lot, but I kind of believe that's in keeping with the mission of the, I was looking at the homepage, at the mission of the Ontolog community, where it says this is an open international virtual community of practice devoted to advancing the field of ontological engineering and semantic technologies and advocating their adoption in mainstream applications and international standards. I said a whole lot, so I better pause for a moment.
Yeah, Matthew West here. I'll just chip in on that. I agree with what you're saying, that very often it wouldn't appear at the moment that there's an obvious place for ontology to be done. But I think there is a place where it should be done, and that's in the phase that I would call requirements analysis. So you gather all these requirements, because I think that ontology is more than just a common language. I think it's about identifying the things and activities that are going on and getting clear definitions, getting clarity about what those things are.
I agree with you completely on that. And I'd like to add that I think that's the simple place to begin. Not because the problem is simple, it's not, it's very difficult. But when you're trying to reach out to a community of people that does not really understand ontologies and why they're important, the easiest way to reach them is to talk about the requirements definition phase of some program.
Yeah.
Can I jump in for a second? This is Bob Smith. As I was describing the ontologizing ontothesaurus effort that we are still in the process, I indicated the NIST and Steve Ray in particular and his efforts on introducing ontology, upper ontologies, formalized ontologies into the standards, in the standards process, and coming out of the STEP environment and the related efforts with auto manufacturers, steel manufacturers, and the other standards from the NIST perspective, I think that's a good point to put the definitions and the requirement statements into
Were you referring to ISO 10303 when you said STEP in the middle of all that?
Not directly. There's many standards. I was looking at the SDO NIST.
Right.
And the SDOs as opposed to the standards that they produce.
Okay.
Not that they're terribly distinct, but it's rather better to look at the source and the product rather than just the product, the standard. Look at the process.
Yeah, because, one of the things I'm in the process of doing, I'm on the Policy and Planning Committee for ISO TC-184-SC4, which produces STEP and a number of other standards. And we're actually starting to talk about migrating our standards through to getting the content out of the sort of old technology and into newer technologies, which, roughly speaking, I would describe as ontologizing them. So that's one of the things that's happening.
Yeah, one of the ISO numbers maybe you could look into. I'm just giving you the number. It's 18629, because I believe that was the original steps work that Steve Ray were involved in, and then later Michael Grinninger put together PSL, Process Specification Language, which is TIFF-based ontology language. He actually did that as an extension on like 18629, which essentially sort of bootstrapped PSL's way into an ISO standard. That's the way I understood it. So, and they've been doing great work, I mean, in 18629 there.
Well, I think Michael has been. It's just stick this thing, so I'm just trying to look which one it is. I think it's, yes, PSL. 18629 is the definition of PSL.
Hmm.
And possibly some uses of it. That's Michael's work, largely. And yes, that's good stuff. But that's creating a language in a particular space for a particular purpose. And of course, 15926 is in SC4 as well, and that aspires to be an ontology as well as a data model.
And also going back to Jeff's earlier statement or question, comment, is the PSL, are you familiar with the PSL work, or are you aware of the PSL work?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, because I mean, essentially, I think that sort of provides a lot of the groundwork where process could be ontologized.
I agree. Well, aside from the blue skying I was engaged in a couple of minutes ago, everyone who spoke thereafter has been bringing me down from the clouds, and everyone's quite right. All what I hear here is everyone's talking about the practical methods to use ontologies, whether they are in or in step. We've recently had presentations on that, and there's some work being done that we've talked about on UBL. All of these things are implementations that have an underlying ontology, although a user of one of these things may not necessarily realize it, but it all leads to better definition, usually of requirements, or if not requirements, of the process that is going to be followed. And I'm under the impression, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that would be a very good place for Ontolog to do some of its work. If you think about the people who are very, very specialized in some things, the people who are very serious ontologists coming from the math background, say, they have their conferences like the knowledge representation thing. Those are pretty deep things. While their work is very valuable, it's not readily translatable to the world at large. I hate to be sounding like I'm picking on them, because they do. Their conferences are very, very good, and they're doing some extremely advanced work. But these things are going to be years before they percolate out to the general scientific engineering communities.
I think that's a really good point, and it's certainly part of. I know it's what I see myself as doing. It's not necessarily inventing new stuff, but finding the stuff that people are doing and making it and bringing it into use is certainly, and I see an Ontolog and a community which is at least in part concerned with doing that.
Yeah, Peter, do you have any comment on that?
I totally agree. I guess that sort of is a good segue into the real question of how could we enable that? Because up to now, a lot of the work, not a lot, but all of the work are actually volunteered work, and any effort in sort of seriously organizing the work is a challenge, because this becomes sort of people's spare time work. Except, I mean, I take it seriously. it becomes my sort of main day job, but it's probably nobody else's. So I've spoken to Steve Ray at NIST, and one of the things he said is Ontolog lacks the traditional organizational structure or even the organizational entity that, let's say, anyone could even put work in here.
Yes,
for example, NIST will have difficulty, saying, giving Ontolog a grant to do anything, because Ontolog isn't even an entity of any sort. I mean, we're not even a 501c3 or any of those type of organizations.
But I think that's an advantage as well as a disadvantage. I mean, it's better for
absolutely.
Some things and it's worse for others. I mean, it means it's very hard for anyone to stop Ontolog doing anything, for example.
Absolutely. That's why, I mean, I think there are pros and cons to all these, and that's why we need the community here to sort of say, okay, these are the things we need to do. How can we enable that, and what are the prices to pay? Is it worth it? Is it not worth it? And so on.
That is both the strength and the weakness of a community of practice like this.
Absolutely.
The weaknesses, of course, we are relying on volunteers, which is limited. It means therefore limited time. And as we talked at a previous meeting here, I think it was last week or the week before, there's a funding problem, and Peter just alluded to that. On the other hand, the strength of a community of practice is that it has quite a large a variety of attendees. I mean, we are represented by many different disciplines, many different interests, and at least three continents. So we need to figure out how to minimize the weakness and leverage the strength. And that takes us back to how do we publicize our activities. I think things like wiki pages in the Wikipedia are a very good idea. It's, of course, that's a poll-type knowledge rather than a push-type knowledge. People have to find it rather than having it pushed to them. These presentations that we hear every couple of weeks are just invaluable. And better than that, they are recorded. But what they aren't is publicized after the fact that there is this body of knowledge, this vast repository of audio and visual concepts, ideas, and practices, mostly revolving around practical applications of ontologies.
Okay, I buy the... I buy the premise that there is something worth selling. Well, selling. We're not looking to charge. So there's something worth giving away. But the key issue is, it seems to me, finding the people who would benefit. How would we find out who they were?
Personally, I think we are doing well in terms of the fact that the ontology community is still a very niche community, very small. So the first step is, I mean, at least within the ontology community, a lot of people already know that we exist. Now it's sort of the ontology community versus the rest of the world. And I think programs like what you're doing, database and ontology mini-series, would be those that would actually launch and market the concept of using ontology or semantic technologies into things that are more traditional, like database-based applications. So I think all the while, I mean, the community has been driving the whole thing in great and very optimal directions. I almost have no complaints.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think that partly because the kind of people that a collaborative community encourages to join are people who see collaboration as having high value and don't mind putting in, you know, putting something into it because of what they get out. I mean, I think that makes it a very creative and valuable environment. It's certainly one of the reasons I'm here, the main reason probably I'm here. But I think that's one side of it. So that's about the people who are putting something in. What I'm hearing is that, okay, so all those database people out there, and there are certainly millions of them, you know, how do we get to them if we're doing something about ontology and databases? Just to put a specific question. How would we get all of them, if not to log in, which would probably be a bit much, at least to pick up the recording and the slides afterwards?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I have, by the way, absolutely no idea how to do that. We would need to link to other communities is the only thing I can think.
Right, yeah, announce our events.
I don't think necessarily announce the events, because I think if we had 300 or 400 people or 10,000 people trying to come in, that would be unmanageable one way or another. not that I'm ambitious in any sense, but it would be nice if 10,000 people downloaded the presentation afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think typically have 10 times, maybe 10 to 20 times more audience on podcasts than we do on the real time lectures.
Oh, that's really interesting.
That's very encouraging.
So we are doing something. I think it would be really good if you, possibly you do, and I just haven't been looking in the right places, publicize some of those statistics about which, you know, this is how many downloads there have been of this talk. Just to encourage, you know, just for internal encouragement.
Right.
Do you have
okay.
any information on who downloads, Peter?
Yeah, I beg your pardon?
Do you know who is downloading?
Not particularly. I mean, I know whether they come from a .com or a .net or a .org or a .mil. And I know if they frequent a lot, because I have a list of like top 10 or top 20 people. But one thing I should let everyone know is, let's say, for example, I'll put an example. A typical scenario, one lecture, someone speaks, let's say, Alan Retter or Pat Hayes. Within the month of that lecture, probably about maybe 150 to 200 downloads. And then it has a fairly long tail, probably maybe 10, 20, 30 downloads every month onwards. But one lecture that has been downloaded more than anyone else actually is Adam Peace's Sumo lecture that was recorded like maybe 4 years ago. And every month we have got like 200 to 350 downloads of that lecture. That's probably partly because Adam Peace also posts that link on his own site as well. And of course, and all plus the fact that his work, the Sumo work, has recently been quite sort of intensively looked at in DARPA and other. That also helps, I guess. But
I agree with you there. Let me just add in on that little piece. The conceptual structures mailing list had quite an intense discussion of upper ontologies not too long ago, and that reaches many dozens of people. So what that strikes me is following along the line of what you're saying is we could quite possibly mention what the work of Ontolog is, at least in passing, to some of these news groups we belong to, some of these mailing lists. Okay, there's a conceptual structures group that mostly revolves around John Sawa, but not exclusively, and covers many, many different topics. There is a, well, I can't remember the name of the other one off the top of my head, but anyway, there are several. Another thing that strikes me is while we have a web page that you do a very nice job of maintaining, and all of those presentations in the, are pulled into one place, again, that's a kind of push, not a push thing, but a pull. People have to know about it. If we were to figure out a way to get that listed as a bibliographic reference on other places, other groups' web pages, for example, there would be more interest, I think, in our activity because people would find it easier. Lots of people know about Ontolog, but they may not know about those kinds of resources available on the Google site.
So let's capture this by saying maybe we should engage our existing member to sort of help get our name and our resource, our body of resource out to other communities.
Yes. Let me mention one other thing in passing. We're not quite into the summer conference season yet, although we're into the heavy planning for that. And this is the time when a lot of these major conferences, which really aren't our forum, will often couple up with a workshop or a one-day conference from somebody else, and it will partner with them. And a lot of times these one-day conferences that co-locate with a 4, 5, or 6 day conference tend to relate to industry practices or practical matters. They aren't so much publishing new research as describing the state of activities in a company or an industry. Sometimes they are sponsored by a particular industry consortium. That would be a good forum to just mention in passing in a 15-minute presentation, if we happen to attend one of them, that there is such a thing as an Ontolog with these valuable resources and what its work is and what its mission is.
Great. So I guess if we positively encourage our existing members to do it, maybe prepare some stock, like 5 slides or 3 slides, and ask members, I mean, Adam Pease or Jeff Schiffel, I mean, next time you speak, I mean, try to include these three slides into your deck or something. I mean, that might help, right?
Yes. Yeah, for example, there. Or in a poster session at a conference, or canned within, released within the company. Let's see, there was quite a number of Boeing attendees at the last presentation, I believe. And the reason for that is inside our company here, I work for Boeing, Mike Uschel up in the Puget Sound region pushes out through an internal news group involving Semantic Web these activities. Now, he's sometimes drops in and out on Ontolog, so you know him very well, and he presented that to Marco. But if he's doing it here, I know perfectly well that that has to be going on at companies like Oracle and so forth that are very big and have a lot of people who are, are members of internal news groups.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So things like that, things like even a poster session at a conference, or partnering one of the one-day industry-specific partnerships that joins in with a longer scholarly academic conference. Those are quite a number of forums where we can make resources known as a sort of in a bibliographic sense.
Yeah, I guess the important thing is to be able to engage existing members to help do it. Like, I mean, Ashok, I mean, if he speaks about ontologies all the time, he probably never thought of, okay, I mean, in passing I'll mention that Ontolog exists. Right, so if he does that, and someone like Doug Leonard would do it, and someone like Nicola Guarino or Matthew West would do that, and then all of a sudden we are into a lot more much wider world than we have
now. What we need is a small standard presentation that we could give.
Yes, I agree.
4 or 5 slides.
Right.
If we could have that prepared, and we have like a Chris Welty a couple weeks ago had a presentation that I'm sure he shows that elsewhere. If we could have him slip in slides that we have prepared as a standard, then that's less work for the presenter and delivers the message the way we've agreed we'd like it seen.
Yeah. In fact, if possible, just one slide, because then it can be slipped into other presentations much more easily.
Cool. Yeah,
that means you think, by the way.
Well, we actually have those.
Well, that's good. Then yeah. I think it's about specifically asking people to do it and not being shy.
Right.
Because there have been a few times when I've wondered whether I ought to do that. And if I'd known about where the right slides were, I might have done something. I'm going to need to go in just a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Can I just chip in quickly about sponsorship?
Please.
Because although I'm not sure it would have actually ended up coming to anything, I did make the offer to at least investigate, even if this what we were doing today hadn't worked. I'm not sure that investigating Shell's telephone conferencing would have necessarily produced a good outcome, by the way. The principle is still there. There are sometimes things that are easy for a large organisation to do, and there are some things which are incredibly difficult for a large organisation to do. Where there are things that it's easy for us to do and I can succeed in getting permission to do them, then I'd just like to put on the table that I'm quite happy to be asked about, could you do X? I mean, quite often the answer will be no, but that's fine. Not something that needs to be a cause for embarrassment on either side. But I'm quite open to being asked.
Maybe I'll throw a couple of thoughts that have always been at the back of my mind and see how receptive or how you would sort of recommend doing it. So a few sort of fairly standard models. One is we open ourselves to corporate membership. Then maybe some corporate member pays a yearly dues to just the corporate members or corporate sponsors. That's one possibility. Another is we break up the services that we are providing and then ask for individual pieces to be funded. For example, one thing that I've always wanted to do is to get transcripts of all the lectures. That costs money because I can't do it myself, and whoever does it, it's a huge amount of work. Even at the first sort of transcripting, which I had found an outside resource to do, but still cost money, we can sort of block that out and say it's X dollars a year, or maybe X dollars for a certain program. Let's say X dollars for this.
Yeah.
Can I
butt in here, because I need to set you down another track.
Right.
Because I think that and I don't know if there are other people from relatively large organisations. I mean, I think you should talk to Mike Uffield as well.
Yeah, Mike actually did make some recommendations.
And it may be that different sizes, different approaches fit different things. What is most likely to be easy for me is doing something in kind. So not joining something. Well, I could join something. I mean, I could almost certainly join something for, a few $100 a year. So that very probably wouldn't be an issue. So you could have a free personal membership and a corporate membership at a few $100s and that would be fine. Your main problem then is that you would have to become a legal entity.
Right.
Really, to be able to receive the money. Exactly. It's probably not worth it. So, I've been involved, Epistle is another non-existent organisation, if you like, which is the same sort of approach as Ontolog. And we did everything by people giving in kind. So, you know, if we wanted to do a project, then the people who wanted to collaborate on that project had to agree to commit the resources to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the project could go forward. So if, for example, it was the, we were talking about the transcription, it might be, I don't think it would be, by the way, because it would be horrendously expensive for us to do it too. You know, it would be that we would offer to have those transcribed, you know, rather in the same way that, you know, we've got a capability for doing telephone conferencing. Probably we could have used it. I don't think that it would have been as good as what we're doing. But, you know, it's something, and by the way, it wouldn't have been any cheaper particularly. But we could have had a go at it. So that's the sort of things that I think you need to think of, you know, in terms of corporate sponsorship. By the way, equally, that there's no publicity requirement for that kind of thing when we do it, at least.
Can I interrupt you? But did you do something to your line? Because now we are returning to the quality problem we had during your earlier session. Echoes and almost garbled. Did you maybe?
I could hear some sort of echoey stuff in the background. Is it still there?
Oh, it is clear now.
Okay, well, just for a while. Okay. So I think that's for an organisation like Shell, at least, and it would be interesting to hear how Boeing felt, whether they were the same or different. I think those are the kinds of options that you've got. But the advantage of doing in kind is that you're still not, you've no requirement to be a legal entity,
mm-hmm.
with the simplicity that has.
Mm.
So, I mean, with Epistle, for instance, we would offer meeting space, because in those days, face-to-face meetings were pretty much the only way you could do stuff. So we would offer meeting space, we would, you know, just as if it was an internal meeting, so lunches and all that kind of stuff, hospitality. Didn't provide anyone's airfares or hotel bills, but we did provide them somewhere to meet, and London's actually quite a convenient place for people to meet.
Did you say it or did not? I mean,
No, we did not give people airfares. We did not pay for people's hotel bills.
Mm-hmm.
That would be... it's not that would be impossible in certain special cases, but I would need to go and get very careful. From, you know, I don't need to ask about a meeting. I just do it. If there was someone whose airfare or hotel bill needed to be paid, I would need to go and ask the question, and I would have, if there was a good enough justification, which really means that it was fairly clear what the benefit to Shell was, then I could get that paid.
So can I say even airfare?
Exceptionally. Exceptionally. I'm trying to think when we've done it. I can think that once or twice we've paid for someone's airfare or someone's hotel bill in exceptional circumstances and where there was a clear benefit to Shell from that person participating in what was going on.
Because the three or four people who have shown this generosity, including yourself, would be McDonald's, who had he suggested that maybe we could, I mean, we talked about, I mean, how we could get funded, and he said, I mean, since there's actually a need for vendors to get their work out to people within our community, and I said I'm strongly against, like, having vendor presence and much less, like, any influence by any vendor after they advertise with us, then he suggested maybe you could sort of have one section that is a commercial section, and you can start let's say, getting people to pay for the commercials and very clearly delineate between the sort of more academic and collaborative knowledge sharing area
I'm going to push back here because in Epistle our experience was very different. Maybe I should talk about the different organisations in Epistle. Epistle is actually a consortium of consortia, and the different consortia were legal entities, or are legal entities. What's interesting is that PISEP, it was a UK, a Dutch, and a Norwegian national consortia. So the UK one allowed everyone in on more or less an equal basis. There was a tiered charging structure that reflected to some extent ability to pay. Apart from that, you could be a software vendor, you could be an end user, you could be a contractor. This is the engineering environment, so it was around data around engineering projects. So you could be an engineering contractor or a CAD vendor, for example, or other engineering design vendor, software vendor, or you could be what we call owner-operators, the people who actually run the plant. There was a certain amount of initial sort of the software people thinking this was an opportunity to sell, but actually they quite quickly worked out that it wasn't. It was a place where they could collaborate and get a better understanding of user requirements, and that actually that was the value for them in being members. Interestingly, what the Dutch one actually kept this very tight separation, and they did that for a number of years, but eventually they gave up on that. And my understanding now is that they're all in one group. They used to have a contractors and owner operators and then a separate software group. So my practical experience is that there can be a session when a new software vendor comes along, and have to be told no, that's not what you do here if they start selling. But once they know the rules, actually they behave pretty well. Mm. And actually it's really useful having them there because sometimes they can contribute something. And at the end of the day, you want the ideas to be implemented in products that someone else is producing, and you can buy for, dollars, sort of hundreds of dollars rather than having to pay millions to develop them yourself.
Mm. Yeah. So maybe I'll also mention the other two people that have made a sort of similar offer. The other person is Dwayne Nickel from Adobe, who had, more than once said, why don't we document something? I guess by way of, the two alternatives that I mentioned, either there's a corporate membership type thing, or there's a piece that they could sort of help fund. We have invited speaker series and maybe they fund that series or something like that. And then the last one is IBM actually helped, if you remember, the Upper Ontology Summit when Nicola Guarino had to attend and someone had to fund. So at that session, actually, NIST and IBM sort of contributed. But again, exactly like what you were mentioning, they all contributed in kind by paying people's airfares and hotel bills.
Okay, and there's another key lesson that from the triple there, that one of the things that we found was that at different times, different people could pay for different things. And one of the key things was just to go with the flow. You have to accept what people are able to contribute, when they're able to contribute it, rather than, for example, try and divide things by three, which, we had three consortia. That wouldn't work. We could usually get everything covered that really had to be done, but not by dividing everything by three. So allowing people to contribute what they're able to contribute. Mm-hmm. Is one of the key secrets there. And as you're kind of indicating there, what people are able to contribute is different from time to time and organisation to organisation. And I think it's about being flexible, but not being afraid to ask. And I think you're the person we would expect to ask, Peter.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you for the pointers. Kurt.
Okay, I think I need to drop out there.
Yeah, I think we've sort of passed our time for 15 minutes already. Let's find our moderator. Yeah. Kurt, where are you?
Peter, one last thing. I believe with the other conferencing service, were we not warned that we would be dropped off?
Can
you hear me now?
Could you repeat the question?
I seem to remember that the other conferencing service would give us like a 5-minute reminder before our time was up.
Actually, there's no time limit on this one.
Okay, well, that was what I was just thinking about, the agenda of contact and voice quality and so forth. So I was just wondering, I wanted to raise the point that we seem to have run over whatever time you schedule with them by a good quarter hour and seem not to have from the service, and that's just worth noting.
Okay, yeah, good point.
Okay.
All right.
Right.
Thank you.
I need to drop off. Have a good afternoon. We had a nice discussion.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us. Kurt? I can't hear you. You're very soft.
Okay, I'll try to speak up.
It's not speaking up. I mean, it's almost you're almost like on mute, except for you're 90% on mute.
Well, I had to move to a cordless phone. Mic is up full volume.
No, I can't hear you.
I can just barely hear.
How about now?
Yep.
Now we can barely hear you.
Then I can't help. Slow her down, Peter.
Okay. So, shall we call it a day? Oh, let me ask. Kurt?
Yes?
Yes. Are you joining us in the CalMed Talks session in like another 45 minutes?
I wasn't really planning on it. Do you need me there?
Yes. I mean, it would be great.
Okay, I'll be there.
All right. Bob, are you joining us?
Yes.
Fantastic. I guess let's wrap up on this one. Looks like we have more discussion to do, and thank everyone for this session, for this final session, which has been extremely helpful. Then maybe some other time we'll sort of consolidate the ideas collected and see how we could sort of put them into real application. Okay, so thanks everyone, and
bye. Thank you, Peter. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you very much, Attila, for calling in all the way from Turkey.
Sure.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end.